Welcome to the Father's Day. I am Jesse Lee Peterson. Thank you all so much for being with me. You can support the FathersDay.tv by becoming a member there on the YouTube channel or jessieleepeterson.locals.com and check out my coffee, Punchy's Coffee. It's amazing. Punchy is my nickname, so it's Punchy Coffee. Go to jessieleepeterson.shop. And the coffee is so good, it makes you want to holler, throw up both your hands. I do appreciate it. I have with me Jake Munro. He is a golf YouTuber and content creator from the UK. Jake, welcome to the Father's State.
It's wonderful to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
I appreciate it. And I was talking to you a little earlier about what's happening over there, and we were talking about how the United States is becoming the UK as far as destruction and illegal aliens and all that mess. Why did the citizens of UK allow that to happen, where the Muslims and the blacks are taking over and the whites are under attack and being raped and killed and robbed and murdered? Why did they allow that to happen, the whites?
Well, it's not so much that they allowed it to happen. They were paralyzed into a position where they were unable to act on this happening. The state of the economy in the UK is such a precarious position at the moment where people, the general populace of white people, they're not in a position where they've got nothing left to lose. They also don't have enough money to not complain. They're in this sort of limbo where they have just enough to live, and if they upset that very, very precarious balance, they can lose everything. They've got just enough to scrape by, and if they were to revolt in any way, or which I'm going to say next up, which is one of the other reasons why they don't say anything, but if they were to be incarcerated or detained, if they were to be put on blast for being a racist or whatever, then that's whatever little money they have left completely gone. I mean, it would be better in terms of motivating a revolt if people here in the UK had nothing left. They've got, well, I've got nothing left to lose, let's fight. But they're in this very, very precarious economic situation. And the other reason why they've been allowed to use the phrase allowed it to happen is because, quite frankly, there's nothing they can really do, because there has been legislation and policy put in place in order to paralyze people from saying things. There are legalities correlated to saying things against immigration. Like, for example, have you heard of Prevent that operates here in the UK?
Prevent?
Yeah, Prevent.
No, it's, I've not heard of that.
Yeah, it's a denomination of the terrorist police force here in the UK, and they're specifically organized to deal with extremism, to deal with terrorism, which is a blanket term. It's an ambiguous term that they operate under. But what they typically do, a lot of people are familiar with the 2023 reports of around 12,000 people in the UK being arrested for social media posts. Probably familiar with this kind of statistic.
Right, yes.
Yeah, so that's a very, very famous 2023 statistic of the amount of people that were, at the very least, brought in and questioned for the posts that they made online. Prevent are responsible for that happening, and they've arrested mothers in the middle of the day, and teenagers, and they've arrested hardworking fathers and stuff like that. And with the punishments that they've been doling out, even for saying things on the internet, Facebook, very, very mild things, absolutely innocuous things, even just saying, I'm not entirely satisfied with the amount of immigration that's coming into the UK. Nothing. Derogatory, you know, not even slurs were being used, and that was enough for these people to be detained.
That's
so
amazing.
The reason why people aren't revolting against this, the reason why this is being allowed to happen by the British natives, is because, quite frankly, they're economically and legally not allowed to fight against it.
But if they don't stand up And then I have a follow-up about that. If they don't stand up and things are as bad as they are now, they can only get worse if you don't stand up at the risk of losing it all, because you're going to lose it all anyway.
Exactly. And this is, I think, is becoming very, very apparent, because at first you have those that are politically aware. You have a small group of voices that are always trying to wake up the proles, you know, so to speak, to use Orwellian language there. But there's a few people, a minority of people that are aware of what's happening, and they're constantly using their voices to try and wake everybody else up, because it's not going to be a small few that do it. It's going to be a nationwide revolt against this regime. And so many things have happened in such a short amount of time. I think now even the layman, even the working man, is starting to realize that the system is not incompetent. It's actually purposefully rigged against them. And I can definitely sense there's growing tension and discomfort amongst the working class British. So I think we are on the precipice of something quite cataclysmic happening here in the UK.
And when you mentioned the YouTube punishment and the arrest for even slightly thinking about it's wrong to have illegals there and all that, that is pretty much happening to white people, right? Mostly white people are being punished and being locked up and all that for thinking or disagreeing with this. Am I right about that?
You are correct. Yeah, it's almost exclusively white people that suffer punishments for that. In fact, there's an example of that. Recently, there was I don't know if you heard about this, but there was a Muslim man that recently went on a stabbing spree in a Jewish neighborhood here in London.
Yeah,
it was Golders Green, and a couple of Jews were stabbed. Now, the individual, the Muslim man that was responsible for the stabbing, had already been processed by Prevent, who was supposed to dole out punishments or even detain these kinds of people. But he went through all their tests and all their checks and all their background checks, and the guy was allowed to walk away from Prevent, who have arrested and detained and locked up white British people for far, far less than what he was being questioned for. And he subsequently went on to walk into a Jewish neighborhood with a knife and just start swinging the knife around. So yeah, it's what they refer to over here as two-tier justice.
Yeah. And that was that young man that was stabbed, according to a report. And the police were handcuffing him, and he said, "I've been stabbed," but they didn't seem to care or believe
him. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that was Henry Novak.
We reported on that.
Yeah, that was a very, very grave, tragic set of circumstances.
Yeah. What a mess. So my question, so the government over there, is it predominantly white, or is it controlled by people of color?
Well, there's, up top, it's relatively homogenous. I mean, all of the prime ministers have been white so far, but there are boroughs that exist. So you've got London, and you've got the various parts of London, like Southampton, for example, and they have their own local councils to run the subsection of neighborhoods and people that live there. And these councils are currently being replaced entirely by foreigners and people that don't even speak English. For example, Brighton's mayor, I believe, can't even speak English. Brighton is a very beautiful southern English seaside town.
Amazing.
Absolutely beautiful place. I've been there before. I've been there multiple times. And their mayor can't even speak English. He needs a translator. In fact, even worse than that, and I covered this recently in one of my streams, in Scotland, I think it was Edinburgh, one of the Scottish council members was a non-binary trans Indian man that came over on a student visa in 2021. And he ran for council leadership, and I believe he won. And I think, and I need to get this confirmed, I think after the elections, he had to leave because his visa did not allow him to stay in the country until it was renewed. So these are the kinds of people that are starting to, and I've got many other stories about that, but these are the kinds of people that slowly are taking over those that control the council, the boroughs and the councils, throughout the UK, and that's in Scotland, and it goes all the way down to Brighton from north to south.
That's amazing. So my question is, why do white people vote in white people who would not defend them and stand up for them as citizens? Why would they vote in white people who put the illegal aliens over them? Why do white people vote for those kind of people? Their own people.
Well, there's only two types of people that do vote for these people that bring in more immigrants, and that's women and Muslims.
Oh.
Because, yeah, a lot of white men, especially in the UK, especially the Gen Z variety, are very much of the conservative persuasion. However, the reason why the Labour government and even the Conservative government over here, which is not the same as what Restore is, Conservative is just as politically captured as Labour is. Labour is our Democrats, essentially. And the reason why immigration's been so aggressive, because before we used to take in asylum seekers, which was, you know, as you know, primarily women and children from war-torn zones. They were temporarily housed here, and then once the war is over, they go home. However,
right.
This system has been entirely abused. And every single day, there is more and more small inflatable boats coming over from France, bringing in military-aged, war-aged black men from Sudan, Senegal, from Morocco, various Somalia, which is another really big one. And every single day, they're arriving on the shores of England, and they're then dispersed and introduced into the British public by the government, who subsidize hotels and other accommodations where they get served free food, they get free phones, free clothes. In fact, some of them are even given jobs for things like DoorDash, and which is, you know, taking away jobs from kids who could be doing that, teenagers doing that. And the reason why Labour are complicit in doing this is because essentially what they're doing is they're importing their voters. So they know the British public are not going to vote for them because they are just, they're consistently, chronically incompetent. And at this point, it's no secret that they hate British people. The last prime minister that just resigned was a former Trotskyist and a columnist for a socialist magazine back in the late 80s. So essentially what's happening here is a brainwashed female population of the UK and a very, very large Muslim population. London, of which only 38% consider themselves to be white. There's a vast majority of London that is non-white.
Amazing.
And these people vote in people like Sadiq Khan, which is a Pakistani mayor of London. And this is how this keeps happening, because they're voting in, they're importing their voters into the country.
What a mess!
Yeah, unbelievable. It really is. And they constantly misrepresent the immigration numbers all the time.
The same thing happened in South Africa. As you know, white people ran South Africa for a long time. It was beautiful, but the whites gave in under pressure, and the blacks took over. Now it's a hellhole. White people out on the farmland trying to have a life, but the blacks, according to all reports, are following them out there and killing them and things like that. And now that's happening in America, exactly what's happening in your country, in the UK, is happening in America. It happened in South Africa. And I've noticed that in all of the white countries where it was built by white people, it was amazing. They've allowed these people to come in and completely take over. And I'm just blown away, because I know it's fear of being called names or losing something, but I just don't understand how white people can, with the help of God, build the greatest countries on the planet and then just allow their enemies to come in and completely take over. Their children, their women are being raped, robbed, knocked out in the streets and everything. I'm just not understanding, where is the fight?
Mm.
Well, you know, stand up, fight, voting out these people. I'm just not understanding. What do white people, and then I want to move on, Jake, but what are white people expecting to happen, and where will they go when their countries are completely taken away from them?
Well, historically speaking, white people have been very, very long to anger. It takes a very long time for white people to reach a point where they reclaim their nations. I mean, the Reconquista is one, for example, that reclamation of their country took hundreds of years. It was a very, very long process. And I said this before on a previous stream, but I believe that it is white people's very complacent nature, very placid nature, that is the reason why white people have been able to build such incredible societies and amazing architecture.
Yeah.
Is because we're not prone to reactive violence. We are very docile, and we focus primarily on diplomacy. And I think white people do this because they know the efficiency of which we operate causes borders to shift. Entire religions get erased as a response. There's incredible amounts of casualties whenever white people do it, because we are so, in terms of the military, we are so efficient. And white people always want to try and avoid that because of how catastrophic it is in order to engage in something like that, because of just how powerful we are. And it's because of this virtue that we have the cities that we have, and we have the societies and the diplomacy and the capitalism and the democracy that we have, because we are not prone to reactive violence like a lot of other places throughout Africa are. They are very prone to almost childlike, very infantile fits of immediate reactionary violence.
Right.
And we don't do that. And because of that, we have the patience in order to really build what we have here.
But the white man who founded these countries, they went through hell. They were tough. They endured. They fought back. They stood up. And then when I was growing up down in Alabama, on a plantation, under Jim Crow law and all that mess, in those days, white people stood up even back then, especially white men. But in my country, I noticed that once they came up with this stupid idea of civil rights and all this other mess, white people kind of gave up and gave in. And it just seemed to be, it was...
Well, it's like they say, it's peaceful times make weak men.
Yeah. That's
and
a good
I think
point.
That's exactly what happened. We're not the strong, hardened post-war white man that we used to be. This is, I mean, just look at the transgender ideologies that are spreading. They're only spreading in privileged countries. Like, you won't find transgenderism anywhere else on earth. You won't even find gay rights anywhere else on earth, except for the very, very privileged states that comprise America. And because of this peacefulness, because of this perpetual peacefulness that is created weak men in its place, we have found degeneration, and we found debauchery, and we found all these things that are weakening America, even the white nations, from its very core. And these hard times are about to make some very strong men.
Also, things will change for the good, meaning that at some point they're going to say, hell no, I won't go.
Absolutely. I mean, white people for the longest time have been the global minority, ethnically speaking. And despite this, we have not only been able to maintain our numbers, though they have been declining, but we've been able to thrive on a planet that is primarily populated by what people could consider to be savages. And you've got the Eastern Asians that sort of mirror the same kind of thing that we do as well, like the Japanese and South Koreans. And they've built similar cities and societies. Some would argue, arguably, they would be better. But, you've got the Japanese, for example, who suffered two nuclear bombs, which was potentially enough to wipe them out entirely. But a few decades later, they made Nintendo. So there definitely is a trait that exists amongst races that innately makes them superior. And in that superiority, it doesn't really come with arrogance. I mean, you've got the colonizers from the from Europe who went out to spread their wealth and their prosperity with other nations. I mean, for example, you had the Spanish that went over to Mexico and they stopped the Aztecs from all those blood sacrifices that were killing thousands. I mean, there were local tribes that even helped the Spaniards to fight the Aztecs. And we've, even in Africa, there's been missionaries, Christian missionaries, that have gone down there, and they've abolished human sacrifice. And it's not like even our prosperity comes with this arrogance. We very much do come with altruism. We want to go out and spread that with the world.
Right. Amazing. Very, very interesting. I don't know if I ever heard anyone explain it as clearly and as well as you've done. I appreciate that. I want to know what's important to you.
What's important to me is to maintain British culture, which ties very closely to the identity that you see before you, which is, you know, the black lipstick and this thing going on here. This is what is called goth, which is a white subculture that was developed towards the end of the 70s and the beginning of the 80s in the UK. And it was the prosperity and the liberty that the UK held that allowed people like myself to explore this sort of creativity and artistry. And with the invasion of Muslims and an inferior antiquated culture, which has provably failed in its own nations, whenever they come over here and they overwrite the British culture, everything else goes with that. Sharia law will make sure that no freedom, no artistic expression is ever shown again. And because of that, I very much do stand against, I oppose all of that. On top of that, not just the subculture and the freedoms and all of the artistic expression that is associated with the UK, I mean, London specifically, like you've got punk music and there was the Beatles and you had Ozzy Osbourne, all these kinds of really amazing things that changed the world.
Yeah.
And those were allowed to propagate, those were allowed to spread because of the liberties and the freedom, the prosperity that was within the UK at the time. But with this invasion of Muslims and with the invasion of these inferior cultures and with these low IQ savages from opportunistic countries throughout Africa and even India as well and neighboring countries like Bangladesh, what you're bringing in is violence against our women and our children. And it's not that we're making a space for their culture. Their culture is erasing ours entirely. And I love British culture. I love British people. I love this country. I love the countryside. I love the stiff upper lip, the unshakable sense of optimism that the Englishman innately holds within himself. Such a small country was able to do so much. I mean, for example, America's there and was prosperous was made because of people leaving the UK in the first place, along with other very amazing Europeans, to build the fantastic nation of the US. And it's that excellence that I wish to fight for and preserve. And if I can do so by using my voice online, enlighten other people to also stand up for the same things.
And so, being a goth person, you have a white face. You're saying that I'm black and slow, so I'm trying to break it down. You're saying that, okay, white is beautiful. This is my country, and I'm not going to shy away because you're trying to destroy me and my country. So I'm going to become whiter. Right?
Yeah, it's a reflection of, I think it's closely tied
right on.
To one of the deeper elements of goth, which is this this morbid fascination with death. I think it has something to do with that.
And,
but yes, very much so. Yeah, something like that.
And do you walk around all day painted white, or do you do it do you walk around all day out on the streets and everywhere like that?
When I was a younger man, I did. Yeah, I was very dedicated to the cause. I would go out full face and make. In fact, I've got my eyebrows back in my maturity, but when I was much younger, I used to shave them off, no eyebrows whatsoever, full freak mode, very, very strange looking. And that was me expressing how I feel, the artistic expression of that, even making music as well.
Right.
And but nowadays it's more of a statement to reflect one of the British customs that is very close and dear to my heart, which is the goth subculture.
What's the difference between today's goth as opposed to the 90s?
Well, the 90s was actually very much about industrial. But the 90s goths were kind of like what the punks were like in the late 70s. It was kind of like, I don't care what you think, I'm going to do what I want to do. And anyone can do anything they like as long as you're not imposing on other people's beliefs or telling people they can't do something that was a very central focal point of the movement. It's like, you know, it's all about the music. It's all about, you know, the cool costumes. It's all about the artistry. It's all about the expression. And rule one is you don't impose on any of that. However, these days, because of the feminization of not only the West, but also the feminization of alternative subcultures, women have gotten control. And yeah. A feminist state is a police state, to quote Rollo Tomasi, one of my favorite authors. And of course, with the dominance of women within alternative subcultures has come two very predictable aspects, one of which is the horrification of goth. It's become a porn genre rather than a subculture. And they very much exploit goth in order to get attention, which is the very natural histrionic nature of women. It follows them everywhere. I mean, Dr. Unwin back in 1932 wrote about a very similar concept multiple times through many different cultures. The only other thing that they did that was entirely predictable was to become tyrants, authoritarian tyrants that censor and manipulate the subculture in order to suit their needs. It's like this, this innate desire in order to become the gatekeepers of it. It's like this control that they desire at all times.
Yeah.
And they've turned it into this leftist hellscape, which mirrors very, very closely Antifa. And that's actually where I started, was to, when I realized what women were doing with the alternative subculture, they had turned it into this very far left. You have to be leftist. You have to agree with trans ideology. You have to agree with gay couples adopting young boys and raping them. You have to agree with all this leftist propaganda, or you can't be goth. And to me, being goth since, 2006, I was 15. I've been doing this for a long time, about 20 years now.
Did you do that when you were a child living with your parents?
Yeah. I was 15 years old. Dressing very similar to what you're seeing now. I've been doing this for about 20 years now.
And your parents didn't have any problem with it?
No, my dad was very supportive of that, because my dad was also a rocker back in the day, back in the early 80s. In fact, he was going to be the drummer for Thin Lizzy's reunion tour in the early 90s. And because he was a rock drummer, and he's seen it all. He's seen all the rock stars get up there with the face paint on, like Kiss and all those other guys.
Right.
So he's very familiar with that, and because my look very, very closely correlated with the kind of music that I was writing as well, and he was very supportive of that, so no, he had no problem with that. And do you know what? Retrospectively, I'm very thankful for that as well. I could have very much had a father that was intolerant of that, which I think probably would have been worse.
Yeah. I want to go back to the woman thing. Mm. What happened to the white man that he allowed his woman to go out of control? He allowed her to, because that was normally after the so-called civil rights movement, which was the worst thing that ever happened to a blacks, other than abortion. What happened to the white man that he allowed his white woman to go out of control, to take over, to vote, to become a leader? Because it wasn't always that way. Why did the white man give in to the white woman?
Well, there's two answers to that. One is secularism. You see, one of the reasons why every single religious scripture on earth has boundaries within it for women, like you read anything like Quran or the Bible or right. any of these other religious texts, there's almost always a detailed guideline on exactly how women should behave and what boundaries and liberties they're allowed and which ones they're not. And it's because thousands of years worth of men have known the very nature of women. It's as soon as women gain control, it is not too long before the entirety of society is destroyed, and they're digging up your fossils and your remains many thousands of years later. So it's the very nature of women to wield sex.
Yeah,
which is the other aspect of this. So you had secularism, which is the removal of any of the religious constraints and boundaries that were placed upon women, which weren't by men. That was a very godly boundary that was put on women, which made them act and behave in more puritanical ways in order to maintain their behavior. because they don't think pragmatically or analytically like men do. Right. The other aspect of it was that women realize that they are the harbingers of sex. They are the ones that give out and take away consent. And because of this, they realize that they have power, very gynocentric power, because men desire women. And this desire was used against them. And it was this very... if you look at all the feminist propaganda, all the feminist liberation bullshit that was coming out, it was very much, don't get married, don't have kids, be promiscuous, sleep around, don't settle with anybody. It was very much, gynocentric. It was the sexual liberation of women, which to reference Sex and Culture by Dr. Unwin again, is a slippery slope and ultimately leads to society crumbling.
Yeah.
After just a few generations.
Maybe.
But yeah, I would say the women gaining control and naturally losing control of themselves is because of secularism, which is the removal of any and all religious boundaries that were applied, and the Rothschild-funded and Marxist-funded feminist propaganda that ultimately led women down a very selfish path.
Amazing. As you were speaking, I was reflecting prior to the civil rights movement, as I said, no such thing as civil rights, by the way, and the worst thing that ever happened to the blacks and to America, there was no way in hell or on earth that the black woman would have been able to lead the family, lead churches, lead religions, and I mean, the so-called community and everything. And I remember growing up, it was on her. Black women didn't even want to work for other women. They were like, no, I would never work for a woman. Women are crazy. They don't know how to lead. It was understood. But then the so-called civil rights movement came along and they made black men by bringing in the government and all that. Oh, we're going to take care of you, woman. You don't need your husband. And they gave the women a false sense of power by welfare and stuff like that. And now these black women run churches, they run everything, the family, and it's a mess, Jake. It is hell. All the violence and the crime that you see coming from black people today is because of the hatred of their mothers. And they're yearning for their fathers, but no one would do anything about it because the politicians want power and control, and they allow these women to just go completely out of control. And it's just amazing to see that. It's pure evil. But I want to ask, are you a Christian?
No. I actually had my faith taken from me when I was quite a young boy. I spent some time in a NICU, or sort of a child's ICU, a cancer ward. And I saw quite a significant amount of children die in probably the most worst way you could possibly imagine. I saw a six-year-old boy with a brain tumor who didn't know he was dying, but his parents did. And I don't think I'll ever forget the look on the parents' face knowing that that was going to be the case. However, as I've matured, my atheism has become less self-serving and arrogant. In fact, I actually very much support Christians. In fact, I would ride into battle with Christians at this point, Deus Vult and all that. I would go to church if England became a Christian state once again, because I believe that Christianity is the superior religion, and is demonstrably so, because every single nation that has ever thrived has been has thrived underneath a Christian rule,
yes,
in a Christian state. And morality was and societal trust was never higher than when it was a Christian state, which is why I denounce secularism. As an atheist, I may not believe in God, but I believe in Christians and I believe in Christianity. And I think their moral code is, again, provably efficient at maintaining a high trust society and allowing nations and people to survive and thrive. I mean, an atheist would never have the mental fortitude to do what a lot of the pilgrims originally did, because the mental strain was too hard. It was far too strenuous. Like sailing across the Atlantic When they did, with those gigantic wooden ships with like the storms and the disease, and then when you got there, you had the aboriginals, you had the natives that were warring and killing, and all of these things that are the adversity for an atheist, I think, would be far too much to bear. However, a Christian's mental fortitude is not contained within their own mind. They look to something higher.
Let me ask because of tragedy. Why would being in a hospital and seeing other people dying and suffering, why would that cause you to become an atheist?
I could not imagine living in a world where a God could allow something like this to happen. And it's been something that I've been very apprehensive of thinking about too deeply, because I feel like it scares me quite considerably. And I've been able to sleep quite well at night, being able to put those thoughts away. And
but God gave you life, and He gave you this life freely with no requirement. And He allow you to live the life that you want to live. If you want to live a life of misery and thrills and pain and judgment and jealousy and envy, He'll let you live that way. But if you say, you know what, I'm tired of living this way. I want out. I want perfect peace. He'll give that to you too. Why would you blame God for those people who decided, those parents or those children and everything, who decided that that's what they wanted for themselves and their children? Why would you blame God for that?
Oh, I don't blame God at all. It's more just a lack of understanding as to how that could be allowed to happen. I feel like the answer would most likely scare me. It's not that I blame God for making these things happen.
That's what they wanted, Jake. That's what those people, the father and the mother, those children wanted that for themselves, and they passed it down to their children. And God is not going to interfere with your life. He can give it to you freely. Do you understand now that God had nothing to do with it? It should not have affected your belief in God.
I mean, again, this was something that happened to me when I was quite young. I did not have the sort of pragmatic thought processes that would have allowed me to process what I was seeing in context of Christianity. But it's definitely something that's been very, very painful for me throughout my life. You know what? Going through my 30s, I'm 35 now, and there's many, many things that I've come to terms with over the years. And perhaps maybe it's something, one of these things I could revisit and consider, because, because it has been so tough for so long. But I don't blame God at all, because it was primarily the fear of understanding living in a world where that is governed by a God where these things are capable of happening. However, I do believe that over the last couple of years, with me becoming far more not only receptive or even understanding, but far more supportive of Christianity, and therefore and actually putting my trust in them as a governing body, as a religion, I can definitely see in the future how this could potentially lead to me putting some of my trauma behind me and instead reconsidering some of my prior stances on faith.
Amazing. Hi, I'm Jesse Lee Peterson. 2026 marks 250 years of America, and they have put my face on this beautiful silver coin to commemorate this occasion. That's amazing. Call 800-411-2663. That's 800-411-2663. Bond. Grab yours now before they are gone.
What does being an atheist, what does that mean to you, and what does it look like, and how does one live as being an atheist?
Atheism for me is it's operating based on the morality that's provided by Christianity. It's a moral belief system that I believe is extremely effective. However, I think it is characterized by a disconnect between me and this ecumenical force that all Christians can feel. It's not that my life feels empty. It's that I fill it with other things, like, you know, for example, activism or hard work or being a good person or trying to be the best parent I can be. None of this strength is drawn from a god, though it could have been. And I believe that that atheism is not inherently a selfish thing to have. I think it could come from, in my case, it could come from trauma. But I believe that atheists, given the right set of circumstances or even the right perspective, are very much good people, which is not always the case, because you've heard of Reddit, for example. Reddit is filled with atheists that have that arrogance that I absolutely denounce, and I reject that kind of that atheist, because they always assume that atheism correlates to intelligence. That's not the case. I've met some very, very stupid atheists over my time, and I've met some very, very smart Christians, and it has nothing to do with IQ, and it's nothing to do with any of these kinds of things. In fact, I'm envious of Christians, because to have that connection to something higher, to have that, because I've seen one. Do you know what? There was one story specifically that really spoke to me. It was a woman. It was a young girl, maybe around 18, 20 years old, and she suffered she got meningitis, and she lost, I think, all of her limbs. And I think she lost a lung or something like that. And I saw an interview with her in her hospital bed. And, you know, she was a happy, healthy girl. And there she is now with no limbs at all. She's just a torso in a bed. And as an atheist, I was looking at that. And I'm like, what's the point in living? What's the point? Your lust for life is gone. You can't do any of the things that you used to do. Just give up. It's over. Game over. Like, I would just say, put me in the ground. I'm done. But she stood there with a smile on her face being interviewed. And she was like, I thank God. And Jesus Christ for giving me the strength to endure what I just went through, and allowing me to survive it.
Amazing.
And to live another day.
Yeah.
And to me, I thought that was absolutely incredible, and I wish I was envious of that level of belief.
Amazing. So let me ask, do you have perfect peace?
I don't think anyone really does have perfect peace. As long as you're young, I feel like there's always things to be done. However, I think overcoming the sort of volatility of youth that a lot of people in their 30s sort of beat ultimately, and they gain maturity. I would say that is definitely some sort of inner peace that I've definitely found within maturity. Whenever it comes to things like the fear of death, I do tend to skew quite aggressively towards the concept of non-existence, and this concept that the brain cannot comprehend non-existence, and therefore it's redundant to be afraid of it, because you can't be afraid of death, because your emotions, your ability to feel afraid, is left with your body. Wherever you go after that, you are separated from the chemical processes and reactions that allow you to feel fear and anxiety. So for me, even the fear of death, which is one of the biggest, greatest fears of mankind, is not something that I struggle with.
Amazing. So let me ask, I'm black and slow, so...
You're fine.
Do you have perfect peace?
I would say, aside from me being very, very busy and wanting change and wanting to fix my country and wanting to fight against the evils that encroach on my nation and the erasure of white culture and white people, I would say, yes, I do have what some could consider inner peace, yeah.
How about perfect peace?
Perfect peace, I don't think I'm going to be able to achieve that until I'm much older, but I can definitely see that being something I can most certainly achieve.
If it were possible to achieve it right now, in this very moment,
yeah,
would you accept it?
Oh, I'd seize that immediately.
And so if I told you how to receive it, you're going to have to do some work.
Would receiving perfect peace be to accept Christ?
Receive it, no. Because you can't accept Christ. That doesn't make sense.
Sure.
Receiving perfect peace mean that you have to love your enemy. You have to love your neighbor. You have to love God with all your heart, soul, and might. And that's not going to happen, Jake, until you forgive your mother and then forgive your father for not protecting you from your mother. Are you willing to forgive your mother?
I definitely feel like it's something that I could potentially do, yes.
And why haven't you forgiven her for turning you away from your father?
Because I believe that I've been so focused on my own life path that the forgiveness of my mother is not something that has, or the non-forgiveness of my mother, or even the actions of my mother, is not something that's deeply affected me. In fact,
it's totally affected you.
It definitely affected.
It's one thing that has affected your whole life, because she recreated you in her image, and now your mindset and emotions are from her, because you become like what you hate, what you're angry at, what you resent. So as a kid, when you resented her, because you were born innocent, you wasn't born with anger, you wasn't born with fear, you wasn't born with all that. But because she was already that way, she imposed her evil will upon you, you became angry, and you became like her. And the way out, she couldn't help herself. Her mother did it to her. And because of that, and the mother did it to her, and so on and so on. And if you can really see that you are angry toward her, you resent her, and realize she couldn't help it. Mother, go to her. You got to face her if you can. Mother, I am sorry for resenting you. I become like you. What the? And I forgive you. I'm sorry for resenting you. And I promise you, in that very moment, God will forgive you and set you free. He will take away all your fears, all of your doubts, all of your loneliness, all your past, all your future, and give you perfect life. But you got to forgive.
I can definitely believe the psychology of that, yeah. I think, psychologically speaking, the process of forgiving someone that has caused quite a lot of emotional torment, I think is totally beneficial, because you are, in that moment, psychologically speaking, you are letting go of that resentment.
So, yes. I can
most certainly see.
You're not playing God anymore by judging. And every human being on the planet, man and woman, men and women, boys and girls, they have to forgive their mother in order to return to their father, where you can love your father, and by forgiving him for not protecting you, then you can love God. It's not going to happen until you do that. You got to forgive. Yeah. And you'll be free, and you'll have an amazing life, a life of no fear, no worries, no nothing. You just live your life. Will you forgive your mother?
I definitely feel like it's something that could be on the horizon, yeah. I mean, the way that you put it, Mr. Peterson, is definitely beneficial. It's definitely very alluring, very appealing to me, especially with a lot of the roadblocks that I've overcome in my 30s. I mean, for example, forgiving my father and reconnecting with my siblings after 14 years of estrangement.
Yeah.
And I think that is most likely a very pragmatic and a very natural next step. Yeah.
Every human being, all who are born of the woman must be born again of the father. All who are born of the woman have to forgive, because her spirit is evil. And it's not her, but it's the spirit that made a home in her due to what Eve did. And it passes, hell comes through the woman. And every man, every woman has the spirit of the mother. And that's why you have to forgive, so you can have love. And then you'll pass on love to your children, if you should have children. But you'll become the light of the world. Did you know that the woman's God, the man's God is a God above, and the woman's God is a God below, small g, Satan? Did you know that Satan is a woman's God?
I can definitely believe it.
Yeah. But you got to forgive it. When women forgive their mothers, then they too become daughters of God by forgiving their mother. Have you noticed that every woman you have been involved with have been difficult, because every woman you've been involved with was your mother, and the cycle was repeating itself?
Read me like a book there. Yeah, one of the most toxic women I've ever in a relationship was almost identically my mother.
Yeah. Every man married their mother or get involved with their mother, and every woman get involved with her father if you were weak. And the cycle repeats. That's why we need love. And love only coming from God, from above. It's not an emotion. And most people don't understand the love, the power that will come to them when they forgive and they become one with God. You're not going to become one with God any other way, But you got to go and forgive, and he will don't ask for forgiveness from anyone. You forgive them, and God will forgive you. Isn't that amazing?
I like the sound of that, Mr. Peterson.
One other thing. So will you go and forgive your mother? I'm not trying to force you. I'm trying to encourage you.
No. I think you've made a very good case for doing so. It's definitely, like I said, it's a very natural next step for me in my 30s. This has been a decade of discovery for me.
Yeah.
And I can definitely feel like that is something that I need to do.
Right on, man. Let me ask one other quick question. Do you, and then I have something that I want to talk to you about.
Sure.
Do you create your own thoughts?
Do I create my own thoughts? I assumed as much, yeah.
And how do you create your own thoughts?
Through perception and reception of information.
And how are you doing that? What are the steps to create a brand new thought?
I guess it's just the emotional response to any and all information or data that's presented, whether it's through interaction or reading something or touching or feeling or hearing something. And the thought is produced of my own personality. It's my own genetic makeup.
And so if you create your own thought, why do you create thoughts that make you feel bad instead of those thoughts that will always give you freedom, make you feel good, if you are the creator of them?
Mm. I mean, I do very much pursue thoughts that are productive. In fact, I have a very efficient mindset and very strong work ethic that allows me to focus on the positives of life rather than dwelling on the negatives.
Why do you create bad thoughts that make you feel afraid or make you feel sad or worried? Or why do you create any negative thoughts for yourself if you are the creator of thoughts?
Well, I think negative thoughts and negative feelings are most definitely a survival instinct reaction to acknowledge what's not beneficial for you.
Amazing.
But the positive mindset that I have has been hugely beneficial. I mean, I've read multiple books on how to maintain a positive mindset, because only a positive mindset is efficient, effective, and productive.
Who are you?
Who am I specifically, as identified by a name, categorized by a thought process, or a vocation, or a series of actions, or under which category as who I am?
Yeah, who are you?
I would say Jake Monroe, the goth YouTuber, family man, hard worker. He is diligent. He's unshakable. He's immutable. And I'm very, very proud of who I am and what I am.
Okay, so you told me your name. You told me what you do and what you're proud of, but who are you? I know your name now. I know what you do. I know you're a hard worker, but who are you?
Well, I was hoping maybe you could help me out with that one, because outside of those very earthly attributes, who I am ecumenically or even spiritually, I think is probably something that you might actually help me towards.
Here's what I recommend.
Sure.
When you realize, yes, I am angry, I'm wrong for being angry, I'm going to go and forgive, I promise you, you will come to know who you are. It will be revealed to you, and it will blow your mind. It would be amazing. But you got to go and forgive so that you can see who you are, really are. Not what you do, not your name, not where you live, not any of those things. But you got to drop your anger so you can come into the light. All right?
Well, I like the sound of that.
All right. Let me know how it goes.
I will do.
I want to know, is it true that last week there was a report released that says in the U.K., that allegedly 250,000 British girls were raped by Muslim grooming gangs. Is that true?
That's 100% true.
Really?
Yeah, since the 1960s all the way up until the current decade, there have been 250,000 at least British white women exclusively that were abused by Muslim and primarily Pakistani organized gangs from Scotland down to the south. Even in Northern Ireland, where I'm currently living, there is an active confirmed rape gang.
Wow. And mm-hmm. and who do you blame for that?
The government.
That is amazing, man. The Muslims are taking over our country, too. We have a Allahu Abba mayor of New York City now,
yeah.
Mandami.
Yeah.
There are other Muslims running for office. And Ilhan Omar, I can't believe... Yeah. When I become president, the one thing I'm not going to allow to happen, foreigners will not be able to come into our country, especially foreigners who think that we're the big Satan and that Israel. I'm not going to let those people come into my country and run my government. That doesn't even make sense, man.
I 100% agree with that. I mean, just look at the religious scriptures and see how we are described in there. And if they're not willing to renounce that inferior archaic religion in order to assimilate into white culture, then they have to leave.
That is mind-blowing, man. That's a sad thing that many women have been raped and stuff.
Yeah, it really, really is. And what's even sadder is the fact that it is being ignored entirely by our top-level government. The Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, who is in the process of resigning, failed to mention a single word about it, hasn't even acknowledged the fact that it happened. And we have our own Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, a Pakistani man himself, who refused to investigate. He refused the inquiry into the rape gangs in London.
Wow.
In fact, he doubled down and insisted that they were not happening, which is another reason why I believe that these people are not as British as I am, despite what they keep saying.
Yeah. I guarantee you, had white men were doing that to women of color, it would be a totally different story.
Oh, our heads would be on spikes, yeah. So
I'm telling you.
If we went to Pakistan and we started organized rape gangs as white men targeting almost exclusively Pakistani women, we would be murdered.
Are the blacks in the UK as out of control as they are in America? And not all
Absolutely.
Blacks, of course. Not all, but most. Are the blacks out of control in the UK as they are in America?
Yes, they represent almost one-to-one the same over-representation of violent crimes and rapes and drug crimes as the U.S.
What a mess!
Yeah. And it's the same in Sweden as well. Sweden was is infamous for being the first country to open its borders to African migrants. And long story short of that situation, they became... one of the highest countries in Europe for rape crime, for rape and murder, violent crimes, and they ended up having to pay the migrants to leave the country.
So what's wrong with the blacks?
I was hoping you could tell me.
They hate their mama.
And single mother culture.
Yeah, and they're yearning for the father. How do the... British people feel about the great white hope?
I think for the most part, or for the longest time at least, there has been apprehension about sort of embracing white hope. I'm assuming is that you know, white people are going to maintain their countries and be
no,
prosperous.
No, how do
on
they
their
feel
own?
About the great white hope?
The great white hope? Can you define that for me?
You don't know who the great white hope is?
No.
Some people call him amazing. They say, what manner of man is this? The wind entity obeys him. Some people call him king, and they hold king rallies around the world. Some people call him daddy, and they say, daddy is home. I call him the great white hope, Donald Trump, man.
Oh, Donald Trump. Right. Okay, well, now we're on the same page here. I think the attitude towards Donald Trump has definitely shifted in this nation. And that wasn't always the case, because I don't know if you know this, but there is a propaganda television channel station here in the UK called the British Broadcasting Company, the BBC. And they are complicit. They were actually sued by Donald Trump or misrepresenting January 6th.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
Yeah, so the people in the UK, we get a very watered down... So we don't just get one-to-one news from like CNN or MSNBC or Fox News. It leaves those networks and those stations. It goes through our stations, it goes through our propaganda distributors, and then we get it. And because of this sort of this double filter of the information coming from the U.S., and because the BBC is very much captured by left-wing propaganda and is labor-owned, we only get to see, the British public at least, are only ever exposed to very, very tightly curated negative exposure of Donald Trump. But with the ubiquity of social media, especially with X, people are starting to see the truth.
Right on.
And people are starting to realize that that Donald Trump is not the, at least not the kind of evil that they were being told that he was.
Yeah.
Especially following that lawsuit that Donald Trump issued against the BBC for the misrepresentation of J6, because they obviously edited it together to make it look like Trump was saying, go get him, boys, get in there.
Amazing. When I wake up in the morning, I say, thank you, God. And then I say, thank you, Mr. President. I am so grateful that Donald Trump is our president at this time. It's amazing. Let me ask you a quick question there. I'll put you on the hot seat because of time.
Sure.
I've noticed over the last recent years that, and not all, of course, but white people, some white people are hating, appear to be disliking and blaming the Jews in the same way that the blacks blame the whites. Mm. And over the years, the blacks have blamed the whites for everything, and they haven't gotten nowhere as a result of blaming, because a victimized person is a wicked person. They're a loser. Why have you noticed that the whites are blaming the Jews in the same way that the blacks blame the whites? Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I don't think it's the same concept of blame. I think whenever white people are doing this, it's more just pattern recognition, and I think it's threat detection. Basically, white people have been able to ascertain that there's a reoccurring pattern of Jews being behind very specific types of human rights organizations that are specifically designed to disparage and disperse white people. And there's multiple over here. I mean, Islamophobia, the phrase Islamophobia and the concept of Islamophobia was created by two British Jews back in 1997. And that very concept is being used today in order to paralyze the British public into not acknowledging the threat that is very much here, which is the threat of the Muslim regime. Now, you can't detect that as a threat because that's now classified as Islamophobia. There's also the Behavioral Insights team over here in the UK, which is responsible for potentially rumored to not only influence and manipulate victims of migrant crimes, but also to write their victim statements so that they do not stir up racial tension as a result of them being attacked by a migrant. They're responsible for manipulating victims.
So let me ask, because of time, Jay.
We're
just running out of time here. So what's wrong with the whites that they allow anyone to go into their countries, America and Europe, and take over and influence like that? Is it, if that is happening, I'm not saying yes or no to it because I'm just not learning all this. Is it the Jewish fault that they allowed that to happen, or is it the white fault that they allowed it to happen?
I think it is, it's definitely Jewish influence that has destabilized white men over a period of decades, starting roughly through the 60s, and it's been half a century of subversion, coercion, manipulation.
But whose fault is it, though?
Hmm?
Whose fault is it? Is it the Jewish people's fault or the white people's fault that they allow someone to go into their own home and take over, influence?
Mm. Yeah, it's the fault would be, I mean, you've got the Jewish nature or perceived Jewish nature, which is to subvert white society. And I don't think the white man is at fault. I just don't think that they were able to ascertain the threat or the coercion as it was happening. So I think ultimately the fault lies with the the inability to perceive exactly what their intentions were initially.
And so whose fault is
it's
that?
It's a fault that can be rectified.
Whose fault is it, though?
Could potentially be the white man for allowing this to happen in the first place.
Yes. And I'm accustomed to white people, growing up at least, white people taking responsibility. And because of that, no one was able to keep them down in those days. But once you become a victim, then you lose because now you're a victim, you feel helpless, you feel to blame. You don't have that warrior fight in you once you become a victim. And I noticed that in the blacks and anyone who think that they're a victim, those people are wicked, they're evil because they'll do anything to get what they want. The worst thing that you can become in life is a victim. Because the moment you become a victim, in your own mind, you become a child of evil.
It's a very astute perception, and you're 100% correct. And I feel like white people almost exclusively are the only ones that are ever forced to take accountability.
Yeah.
And I think in this sense, if we are to accept that it is Jewish meddling and coercion and subversion that is the reason why we are in the position that we're in, we need to throw up our hands and admit that we were not able to stop the threat from invading.
Yeah.
And through accountability, we're then able to make decisions and actions to rectify the issue.
That's what I say to the blacks, because when I was growing up, black people were not victim, man. And as I say, I grew up under Jim Crow law. There was no blame in slavery. There was no blame in the white man. We were taught to love our enemy, to love one another, to speak up, but don't hate. And you have real power. Don't blame. Do you love the Jews?
No.
I'm sorry?
No.
What a mess.
I think that is most definitely the long and short of it. However, there are Jewish individuals that I'm relatively fond of.
Are there Jews for Jesus, man?
There are, yes, there are indeed. There's so many denominations of Jewish, like you've got Ashkenazi and you've got the Orthodox and all those other kinds.
So do you blame the Jews people or you blame the government of the Jewish race?
Well, they have been removed. They've been kicked out of many, many countries over many, I think over 1,000 years they have been, before the Israeli government was even a thing. As a people, they were removed from society. Not as a political ideology, as a people they were. And
so do you blame the people or the government?
I blame the people.
What the?
Just being very honest with you, Mr. Peterson.
Right on. Well, when you drop that anger, once you forgive your mother, you're going to love all people. You're going to have an understanding that will come directly from God, and it's going to be clear. I got to put you on the hot seat. I need you to answer these questions as quickly as possible.
Sure, I'll try my best.
The hot seat.
Is America the best country on this side of heaven?
Yes.
I'm sorry?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Who do you prefer? Marilyn Manson? That's right. Manson or the Cure?
Manson or the Cure? I would definitely... That's a very tough question, but I would have to say Manson.
What is a man?
A miserable pile of secrets.
Did you take the jab?
Which one specifically? The COVID jab?
Yeah, the Chinese virus thing.
Yeah, unfortunately, I was forced to, yes.
Really? Do you drink tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Right, don't forget Punchy's coffee, buddy. Was it a mistake to give women the right to vote?
Absolutely. Repeal the 19th.
Do we need more white babies?
Evidently so. We are below below maintenance. Need to get more white babies out there.
8 years ago, I started the White History Month. July is White History Month. And so we're going to be celebrating our 9th year come July 2026. So will you be involved in our celebration of White History Month?
In any way I can.
Right on. Who is more alpha, Piers Morgan or Margaret Thatcher?
Margaret Thatcher.
Are UFOs real?
I've seen one. I know they're real.
Have you ever tasted something that was so good, made you want to slap your mama?
I have indeed.
True or false? When she's crying, she's lying.
Almost 100% of the time.
Is the earth flat or round?
It is closer to round than flat.
Does a chicken have lips?
No.
Is it ever okay to call a woman fat?
You're doing her a service by calling her fat.
Did you have fun?
Absolutely.
Amazing. I appreciate you coming on the Fall of State. Tell the folks how to get your YouTube channels or whatever you want to promote.
Sure. Well, if you guys want to find me, just make sure you spell my second name right. M-U-N-R-O. It is the Scottish spelling Jake Monroe. You can find me on YouTube with that name. Rumble with the Jake Monroe Show, or over on Twitter, Jake Monroe, M-U-N-R-O. And I look forward to seeing you guys in those spaces.
Amazing. Thank you all for tuning in. I absolutely appreciate it. Don't forget to support the Fall of State by becoming a member there on the YouTube channel or Jesse Lee Peterson, jesseleepeterson.locals.com. And check out all our merch. It's amazing merch included in silver coin with my face on it. That's amazing. Coffee, books, and everything. And don't forget to like, follow, ring the bell. Also, I will do shout outs for you. Go to cameo.com/Jesse Lee Peterson or shoutout.fans.JesseLeePeterson. Too much stuff to remember. I'm black. Don't forget, if you want to see other guests on this show, let my producer know. Producer@JesseLeePeterson. Producer@thefallenstate.tv. What a mess. Jake, that was fun, man.
Absolutely, man. That was an absolute blast. Really fantastic questions. You're a great host. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome, man. My producer will let you know when we'll be airing this, all right?
Fantastic. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, buddy. Take care now.
All right, bye.
Bye.